16-1248, Edward R. Stolz II, DBA Royce International Broadcasting Company, for the appellate, Federal Communications Commission. Mr. Kelly for the appellate, Mr. Shearer for the appellee.
May it please the court. My name is Dennis Kelly, and I represent Edward R. Stolz II, doing business as Royce International Broadcasting Company. The FCC Form 314 Assignment of License Application, which is at issue here, was filed without the participation and approval of Mr. Stolz. And during the course of time, after a number of years, after the FCC had sat on this case for almost 10 years, this court issued its decision on October the 25th, 2005. I'm sorry, let me take that back. The pleading cycle in the application for review before the commission and bank ended on October the 19th, 2005. 6 days later, this court issued its opinion in Kidd v. FCC, which we rely on in seeking a reversal and a vacation of the orders below. And then the commission sat on this case for almost 10 years before issuing decisions. It's our position that this constituted arbitrary and capricious agency action in violation of 5 U.S.C. 706-2.
What is it in Kidd that is so helpful to you?
Well, what's helpful, Your Honor, is that in Kidd, if I could have just a moment to explain the background, there was owner financing in a sale of a broadcast station. And the Mr. Kidd defaulted on his obligations. The note holder went to a state court in California and got court orders where they were able to get the appointment of a receiver. An application was filed at the FCC without the participation or consent of Mr. Kidd. And the commission granted the application, and then they granted another application for the assignment of the license from the receiver to, I want to say it was the note holder. Mr. Kidd came before this court and argued that what happened was that the commission had honored, or the state courts had enforced, a reversionary interest, and because of the FCC rule, section 73.1150, barring reversionary interests in the sense that you can't lien or hypothecate a broadcast license, this court reversed and remanded. The FCC, in response, dismissed the Form 314 and 316 applications and nominally restored the license to Mr. Kidd, although he actually never put the station back on the air again, and a settlement was reached in the case. One of the things in the court's decision was that the case was remanded for the FCC to further explain, you know, its procedures in this area. And because of the settlement, the commission never, so far as I know, have never explained their rationale for what they did. In our case, there was a court order. There was litigation between my client and Entercom Communications, a large publicly traded corporation. My client lost the litigation, and a court order was entered in Sacramento County, California, state court, to order Mr. Stolz to participate in the filing of an FCC Form 314 assignment application to transfer or assign the license of the FM station at issue from him to Entercom. My client did not participate. He didn't consent, didn't participate, and the application was filed. Entercom entered his name in the application and filed it. Mr. Stolz engaged counsel. I was not representing him at the time. Engaged other counsel to file a petition to deny, and then there was a pleading cycle that led on. Our position is that the judgment was a security interest. Once you get a judgment, you know, the creditor has a security interest, and the judge in Sacramento County
can be far broader than anything that happened in Kidd. Because Kidd, as I see it, the court didn't at all question the basic notion that for the ownership issues, ownership station, one relied on state court litigation. And if the party didn't like the outcome of that, the party sought review in the state court system. And it limited what a state court should do as to essentially directing that an application be made to the FCC for the license application, which is what happened here.
I really think the same. I was familiar with the KTHO case when it was happening because I knew Mr. Kidd. when this case came to me in 2015, and putting together the timeline, this case, the Kidd case, really shouted out loud at me as you had a California state judge ordering an individual to do something in the federal system, and he bundled the license and the assets. He could well have ordered, and he did order, the sale of the station assets, the transmitter, the intangible assets, things like this, studio equipment. But he didn't have the right to order the sale of the license. And that's our position in this case, Your Honor, is that...
Well, did this court order the sale of a license, or just order the submission of paperwork applying for a transfer to the FCC and then left it to the FCC to make its usual decision under federal law whether to grant it?
Well, as I understand what happened, you reversed the commission and ordered them to explain their rationale. And the commission really took no further action other than the party settled after that.
Sure, I'm asking about this case. Right? Nobody, all the state court, my understanding, you correct me if I'm wrong, is that the state court said, Entercom, you win your contract claim, file a transfer application with the FCC and let them decide if they think that transfer should go forward under federal law.
Well, that's what happened. That's what happened in Kidd. I mean, the commission could have recognized that there was a reversionary interest and then not granted the applications. I have to admit, Kidd was a new precedent because it had always been the way in the communications bar we did things. We'd go, if there was a default on a note in the financing of a radio station, we'd go get the station put in receivership and get a court order and then bring it to the commission and file an application. And it was never, this type of ruling, I don't think ever came up until it was raised by Mr. Kidd. And so it appears to me, taking it to its logical progression, a state court judge can't issue an order forcing an applicant such as Mr. Stoles to participate in the filing of an FCC Form 314 application. And that to me is, again, the logical progression in Kidd. And that's why we brought this appeal.
Okay. Can I ask you, you had raised in your brief and in some letters something about the separate position on the KDND license. And let me ask my question.
Yes.
And my understanding is that as a result of that, Entercom has given up that license.
That is correct.
Okay, so does that mean that Entercom only owns 4 FM licenses now, and this case is moot?
That, well, as you know, there's still, I submitted this morning through the electronic system the commission's order of Friday the 8th of September. And my client has 30 days to appeal that, but it appears from a fair reading of that order that the commission is not going to look at the death of Jennifer Lee Strange in the context of other Entercom licenses in Sacramento.
Sorry, what does that mean? Do they own more than 4 FM licenses now in this market?
I think it's correct, and they own an AM station.
Right, and so...
So they own...
Whichever rule is applied, even under your view, which is that the 2002 order should apply, they now satisfy it.
Yeah, it would make it moot, Your Honor.
Okay. Any other questions? Did you want to save some time for rebuttal?
Yes, 3 minutes, please.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Bill Scherr for the Federal Communications Commission.
Is the case moot?
Your Honor, the case may be moot. It seems as though Entercom presently would only own four FM and one AM stations, which would comply. As I understand it, the issue before the Court is whether the FCC correctly determined in May 2002, when the application was before it, whether Entercom's ownership would comply with the local radio rule that was then in effect. But but at this point...
his challenge was that you should have applied the 2002 rule, which would have limited them to four stations.
Correct, Your Honor.
Right. So even if we were to say, hypothetically, that the FCC got it wrong, the 2002 rule should have applied, it wouldn't change anything in this case, would it?
No, Your Honor. I think at best, if the Court were to overturn the FCC's decision and send it back to the FCC to determine whether Entercom's ownership would comply with the local radio ownership, it would in fact comply with the number of stations they
I'm
have.
I'm sorry, you're asking us to overturn the FCC decision and send it back?
No, I'm agreeing with you that the case is moot.
Okay. All righty.
Just to quickly address Judge Williams' question about Kidd, the difference between this case and Kidd is that Kidd involved a security interest that violated FCC policy. And so the Court held that the Court didn't call into question the FCC's longstanding practice of accommodating state court orders where consistent with federal policy. What the Court held was that where there's a violation of FCC policy, the Commission can't simply accommodate a state court order without reconciling the federal policy with the state court order, and that was why it remanded. Here there's no security interests in the underlying agreement, and there's no...
Mr. Kelly seems to argue that ipso facto a court order creates a security interest, which I have to say I didn't get.
I think by definition, Your Honor, a security interest is an interest granted by a debtor to secure an obligation rather than an interest created by a court order. If a court order created a security interest, that would essentially overturn the FCC's ability to accommodate state court orders as it did in this case.
Well, I think what he's saying, if I understand it, is that what the court did here was force him, as a matter of law, somehow created some legal interest under California law that forced him to surrender this interest by filing a transfer motion with the FCC. And that, if I'm understanding his argument correctly, is somehow a creation of a legal interest in the license, this forced surrender of it that is equivalent to what happened in Kidd.
As I think Your Honor pointed out, the state court order required that the parties to the state court action submit an application with the FCC seeking FCC approval for transfer of the license. It didn't order the FCC to make any determination whatsoever.
What would have happened if the FCC, between the interaction between the state court judgment, if the FCC, for whatever reason, had said, not going to do it, not going to do the transfer? Would that have been perfectly, I'm just trying to figure out how the two, I get that the FCC here applied its own public interest determination, made its own decision, but given that the holder was forced to file this voluntary transfer, what would happen?
The state court order required specific performance of the underlying agreement, but it was contingent on the FCC approving the transfer of the license. Typically, as I say, the FCC tries to accommodate state court orders in situations like that, and if there isn't a violation of federal policy, that's a bar to that, and if there isn't a problem with the qualifications of the S&E, the FCC will grant it. If the FCC hadn't granted it, I suppose then the whole case would have been kicked back to the state court to make a determination about what to do with the agreement in light of the fact that Entercom couldn't hold the license.
But the court decision here was, the state court decision here was simply that the specific performance required was the filing of the application, not the creation of an independent state law interest in the license.
Right. The state court ordered that the agreement was to transfer the station, including the license, and the state court recognized that transfer of the license required FCC authority, and they therefore required as part of the specific performance that an application for FCC authority be submitted.
There was no reversionary interest in this case, right?
No, Your Honor.
Whereas in Kidd there was.
That's correct, Your Honor.
I mean, it seems to me that's the striking difference, because otherwise Kidd becomes a rather bizarre rule.
As I said, the Kidd didn't call into question the FCC's longstanding practice, which is firmly grounded in Supreme Court precedent, of accommodating state court orders were consistent with federal policy. The problem in Kidd was that the state court order wasn't consistent with federal policy because of this underlying reversionary interest, which violated a specific FCC rule and a general FCC policy, and the FCC hadn't adequately explained in Kidd how it reconciled those interests. That's not the case here. There was no security interest whatsoever.
On the grandfather clause, I need some help understanding where this definition of pending came from, if we were to have to reach the question. Let me ask you first a question. Has the FCC ever applied the definition of pending that it has, that you are claiming this order does, in any other situation that you're aware of?
The FCC in the Golden Triangle Radio decision that we cite in our brief did conclude that the modified local radio ownership rule did not apply to a previously granted application that remained subject to review, just as
it
did here.
That was a very different case.
That case did not involve parsing the word pending.
Well, it didn't involve commission action itself. The commission itself had acted. And as I read this grandfather provision, it says we'll address issues at the time we act, i.e. the commission acts on such applications. But your theory here, so the grandfather clause itself in section 498 says applicability turns on when the commission acts. But in this case, the commission hadn't yet acted.
I think, Your Honor, when the commission uses the we in those application processing guidelines that you're, I think, referring to, it's not making a distinction between the staff acting and the full commission en banc acting. If it was only referring to the full commission en banc, typically applications aren't processed by the commission. They only reach the full commission if the staff grants or denies an application, and then there's an application for review that brings it up to the full commission. But application processing happens at the staff level, and I think the commission generally will use we to refer to its own actions or its staff actions, and then it will distinguish between those two, when there needs to be a difference. When, for instance, the full commission is deciding an application for review and is disagreeing or departing from a decision reached by its staff. Mm-hmm. In answer to your question, I can't cite to you a specific commission precedent where the commission interpreted pending in the specific way that it did here,
right,
has not yet acted on. The commission in the Peninsula Communications case, which is cited in the record, I think it's a JA-222, rejected the argument that the definition of pending in Rule 1.65, which is a different definition, applied universally. This court has...
I get that, just to clarify my concern here, and that is the position, which is not remotely clear from the text of this grandfather provision, and actually seems to point the other way, is that something is non-final but not pending, even though it's still de facto pending before the FCC. And I get that you want to say you can define it any way you want, but if you're defining something in such an unusual way, and that's why I asked if you ever used this definition before, if not, if you're departing from precedent, Golden Triangle don't help you. It supports my concern.
Then
someone needs to be a little bit more clear to folks about what's going on.
Your Honor, it's true that the Commission didn't define the word pending in that paragraph. I think that first of all, the Commission's interpretation is entitled to deference unless it's plainly wrong or internally inconsistent. I think when you look in the context of the whole biennial review order, it's completely consistent with our argument here. In particular, the grandfathering decision 14 paragraphs earlier makes clear that the Commission didn't intend by modifying the ownership rules to require divestitures of existing combinations of stations. Now, it doesn't use the word pending there, but when it talks about processing applications later, a broader interpretation of the term pending in paragraph 498, where the processing guidelines are, would be inconsistent with the purpose of the grandfathering decision
unless one doesn't think, one thinks divestiture, that divestiture interest that should be protected is once there's been final agency action on.
Although the Commission
it's hard to have a lot of interest in something that's non-final and still subject to invalidation by the FCC.
Well, the Commission didn't distinguish between final and non-final authorizations in the grandfathering. And the concerns the Commission expressed about requiring divestitures are concerns that would apply, I think, even to combinations that included stations with non-final authorizations. It's disruptive to have to divest a station, whether or not the authorization is non-final. And I think that it also disrupts expectations. The Commission was concerned about it being unfair to require parties to divest stations that they'd acquired under the existing rules that complied with the existing rules. And I think even if parties understand that there's a risk of closing a transaction, that it'll be overturned on review based on a different outcome, I don't think that
we don't have to go to any of this if it's all moot.
Yeah, I'm not understanding why isn't your argument on behalf of the government, they've conceded it's moot. Mootness is jurisdictional, Your Honor. Unless you have any questions, I'm going to sit down. I'm not getting this.
It's my fault.
Your Honor, he answered your questions long after I thought he would have said there is no case. It's jurisdictional. It's not a ripeness or there's no prudential. If the case is gone, it's gone.
Your Honor, and with that, I'm going to sit down.
I'm not going to let you just for one, because I have one quick thing. Is there any reason we need to have the FCC itself determine that there's only four licenses, or if everyone's in agreement? Is there any factual dispute about that they only hold four licenses? Because licenses can come and go.
They've conceded it. You're not disputing it, are you?
We're not disputing it.
Well, then why don't you say there's no dispute? And
there appears to be no dispute.
All right. All right.
Thank you.
Your Honors, may it please you, I'd like to take one more shot at what happened in the KTHO matter.
Why?
Well, the mootness has to do with KDND in Sacramento. The commission formally deleted their facilities on Friday the 8th. So that's the KTHO's in South Lake Tahoe, California, and this is the Chris Kidd case. This is Kidd v. FCC. And what happened there was when you file an application on a Form 314.
Right, just to be clear before you start, so your position is that even if the 2002 order doesn't apply, if we were to somehow hold and apply, then you still win on your Kidd argument.
Yes. Okay. As an officer of the court, I have to concede that the commission deleted the KDND Sacramento license on Friday, on last Friday, the 8th of September.
Right.
But the argument relative to Kidd v. FCC goes on. And back, I guess it was probably in the late 90s when Kidd purchased KTHO from Paradise Broadcasting, if there was owner financing documents.
What is a relief? If there's nothing in this case in your mind other than Kidd, what is the redress that you would get if we agree with you?
With the KDND deletion, you know, I have to admit that argument is gone.
Then it's irrelevant. Then there's no more Kidd case.
But
you have to have some redress.
Right, but
and
Kidd,
I don't understand, even if your Kidd argument, even if we agreed with you, what's the redress for you?
That you would order the commission to dismiss the application that was the FCC form application that was filed on November the 20th, 2002, which was filed without my client's participation and authorization. His signature was put on the form by someone else. That application would be dismissed, and we would end up like the Kidd case where the
underlying
applications were dismissed, and my client would get the license back.
So we wouldn't get to the question of what law to apply because there shouldn't have been a transfer application process in the first instance.
Whole application should have been dismissed in the first place for the same principles as Kidd, it violated the reversionary interest. I wanted to make the point that the judgment that in the Sacramento served as a reversionary interest. It's a security interest just as if you went down and recorded a lien in judgment. So,
all right.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
The case is submitted.